Profits are down at oil companies like BP, but it may not be time to take up a collection for them.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. One class of stocks that has had a bad month, oil companies. Today, London-based BP reported profits down by $3 billion, this in part because of Western sanctions against Russia, but also because oil prices have been falling sharply. Stanley Reed is energy writer for the International New York Times and joins us from London. Mr. Reed, good morning.
Good morning.
I got to ask you something. The raw material that goes into what BP sells, crude oil, got cheaper. Remind us why that hurts profits if it got cheaper?
BP's profits basically come from its costs in finding, developing, and producing the oil and the price of the oil. So when the price comes down, in general, the profit margin narrows.
BP is running into some headwinds here. I mean, you have like Goldman Sachs lowering its forecast of how much oil the world is going to be using. What's behind that fall in demand?
I think it's two basic things. Economic growth around the world is turning out to be a little less than expected. And then while the U.S. isn't directly exporting a lot of the crude it produces, it is exporting a lot in the form of products, and it's also cutting back imports a lot. And that effect is kind of washing across the world and having a lowering effect on prices.
Stanley Reed writes on Energy Matters for the International New York Times. Mr. Reed, thank you.
Thank you.
Despite lower profits announced today, BP is a generally wealthy company that still managed to raise its dividend payments to shareholders this morning. The price of oil is down today, under $81 a barrel. Now let's do some other numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 0.25%. The DAX in Germany up 1.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. The euro is down slightly to just under $1.27. The Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee begins 2 days of meetings today, and if everything goes as expected, tomorrow it'll announce an end to the taper, the end to the stimulus known as quantitative easing. Kate Davidson reports on what's next.
For 6 years, the Fed has used some form of the unconventional monetary policy known as quantitative easing. When that ends, the Fed still has its conventional tools.
So the Fed still can influence short-term rates, 30-day rates, overnight rates.
Morris Davis is a former economist with the Federal Reserve Board.
It just has decided it will not try to influence longer-term rates like the 10-year Treasury or mortgage-backed securities.
But even if the Fed stops its bond-buying program, it won't stop buying bonds. Ian Lingen with CRT Capital Group says the Fed plans to replace all those securities it owns as they mature. It wants to maintain the size of its balance sheet with trillions injected in the economy. Here's the thinking.
We've put that much more money into the system, and we've provided that much more stimulus. And as long as we're not shrinking the size of our balance sheet, then we are continuing to keep our foot on the pedal.
We're just not accelerating more. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
Some U.S. colleges have faced declining enrollment since the recession began, but changes to a federal loan program about 3 years ago have hit especially hard some historically black colleges and universities. HBCU is the official acronym. From WABE in Atlanta, Martha Dalton has details.
Clark Atlanta University sophomore Jasmine Johnson says waiting for a loan to be approved can be stressful.
My freshman year, when I got here, I didn't have enough money because my Parent Plus hadn't been approved yet.
The Parent Plus is a federal student loan.
They did not let me move in my dorm, and I was like, where am I supposed to go? I have no family in Atlanta. And they just was like, well, you can't move in.
The new Plus loan requirements mean fewer students now qualify. In a two-year period, Clark Atlanta's enrollment dropped about 13%.
It's not like they're Ohio State with over 100,000 students.
Mary Beth Gassman is an HBCU expert and professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
An institution like Prairie View, for example, in Prairie View, Texas, has about 8,000 students. If they lose 100, 200, 300 students, they're going to feel an impact.
Gassman says federal officials didn't warn schools about the changes. She says HBCUs really felt the squeeze because they serve a higher number of low-income students who need to apply for loans. Lenora Jackson is Spelman's director of financial aid. She says the changes initially impacted about 200 of the school's 2,000 students.
200 students not coming back does affect the bottom line of our budget. So I would say that we had to come up with some very strategic ways of getting those students back in school.
Jackson says Spelman was proactive. The school offered student scholarships to make up the gap and coached parents on how to seek an appeal. Morehouse, on the other hand, had to cut $2.5 million from its budget. That meant laying off 50 employees. Gassman says it's not a crisis yet. Enrollment is up at some HBCUs. But she says if schools like Morehouse and Spelman can't recover, the effects could be widespread.
If we did not have these institutions, we would have a huge drop in the number of these students becoming doctors, becoming pharmacists, becoming scientists.
Federal officials have proposed changes to the PLUS loan. The new standards would relax some of the loan's credit requirements starting in the fall of 2015. In Atlanta, I'm Martha Dalton for Marketplace.
And when stock in China's Alibaba went public a couple weeks ago, I remember the Indian press asking why India has no global e-commerce giant of its own. Well, maybe it will soon. There's news today that India's Snap deal is getting a more than $600 million injection of cash from Japan's SoftBank. SoftBank CEO said that Snap deal has, quote, the potential to be India's Alibaba. India is number three in the world for most internet users, but online commerce there has yet to truly catch fire. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.